And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. It's a Monday morning, and we got this is what we're going to do today. In the second hour, we have, the weed man, Edward the Weed Man. Now, we heard about him from James Babb last week, and he had a hung jury, and it was, it's kind of a feed you thing going on, and yeah, well, they call me the Weed Man. What did you think was going to happen? This is. I went and saw last night the movie Lawless. My daughter and her boyfriend took me and Donna to my wife to see Lawless. It was all right. But the main every time you see all these different prohibition movies, you know what they're doing. They're just telling you how messed up this drug war is. So I'm just, whatever. So it was timely. I got to go see that last night, and then we're going to talk to the Weed Man in the second hour. First hour, we have Gabriel. Let me put my glasses on, make sure I say this right. Gabriel Mueller. He's from Liberty Coin Precious Metals, and he is, I think, responsible for the advertising that they're starting to do on Freedom's Phoenix. And what happens is when you want to inject your business into the movement here, there's always, I get a lot of questions about where to go to get goodies. And the thing is, though, is that as time goes on, you start to have people that Generation Next starting to infiltrate their way into the community in a lot of different ways. And this is my point. You'll have freedom-oriented individuals that have been of the mind that, things are bad, and we're going to try and make them better. We're going to take a different path, make different career choices, and so on, precious metals being one of them. And it's interesting. I want to have a conversation with Gabriel about his choice to get into precious metals at a young age and where that came from. Now, at my age, 51, I always keep emphasizing, how old I am. And the reason is because it you can see the revolutions that come around in different generations. As my children were graduating high school in the mid-2000s and so on, what was happening was, Dad, you don't understand, it's different now, blah, 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 really. And what I would do with the internet, it would help. I go, let's go in the Wayback Machine and look at the headlines, the countries, the names, the situations, the Cold War, the this, the that, the war, all these things that are going on at the same time when I was your age, okay? And then compare them to what's going now. It's the same countries, the same individuals, the same people, the same names keep coming up, the same situation, same threats, the same. You know how many times Israel said Iran's going to bomb everybody? So I'm just, this is, there's a cycle. But what's changed is that Generation Next has now started, and this is why I always say, hey, man, we just got to wait for the bad guys, the older guys to die off. Everybody's supporting this whole thing. Don't got to do anything. Life attrition, man, and the other guys take over. So we're going to talk to Gabriel about his walk through this and the impact that he's had or the world's had on him and him on the world. Gabriel, I got you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, help me out here. Let's go ahead and go your history. I'm going to ask you a bunch of personal questions. You don't have to answer them, but I get to ask them. One, how old are you?
I'm 30 years old.
Okay, so you're not, you know, a babe, you know, but I mean, they called me young man till I hit 40. Okay, get over it. So this is, 30 years old, relatively young. So during the 5 years ago, Ron Paul thing really started getting going and so on. So you were 25.
That's right. Yeah, I started following Ron Paul in 2007, right, when he ran for office for 2008.
Okay, did you go to college or anything?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah.
So you were, you know, where were you, what were you doing when you first got the call, the message?
I don't know. You know, I had the call for libertarianism came probably starting in 2003. I was in undergrad, and I had classes where I was learning about history and political philosophy, and I had grown up in a conservative Republican household, and I guess you kind of follow that when you're younger, just thinking, okay, my parents can make no error, and to my credit, my parents never brainwashed me. You know, that's what they did, and they exposed me to it. But come to undergrad, I started getting exposed to college professors who, some of them were very liberal, some of them very conservative, but we would read about libertarianism, and I thought, you know what, I think I'm
how does that even happen? I mean, I my whole life, my little stint in college, you know, my kids, my friend, you know, if I didn't bring it up, you never heard the word libertarian. Progressive, oh my goodness, freedom-oriented, you know, university did you go to?
I went to ASU for undergrad, Arizona State University.
I wouldn't say that's freedom-oriented university.
No, I think you're entirely right. But to the credit to this professor, her name was Jane Ross. I can remember that. I don't know where she is right now, but I hope she's doing well. But she was definitely of the, I would say, liberal libertarian bent. So she was probably more liberal, so to speak, on economic issues, and probably more libertarian when it came to you know, personal or civil issues. And in my opinion, I don't think there should be a difference between the two.
You know, right at this time, let me tell you, you know, things have impact, you know, and kind of opens up a lot of stuff. Let me tell you a little story, and you'll appreciate it. When I first started doing radio in 03, I got a request. Oh, man, well, how long was I on radio? I was probably on radio a year, you know, or less. Mm-hmm. I got a request from a student. Her name was Jennifer. I can't remember her last name. Her husband was a branch manager of some bank, and she was from Payson. She looked like Gina Davis, you know, real tall, you know, buxom, blonde, good. She kind of favored Gina Davis. That's how I remember her. And Jennifer asked to be an intern. So that, not a problem. You know, they had the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism over there or whatever, you know, and if I needed an intern, sometimes I, you know, after this experience, I go, ah, cool, you know, I'll do more interns. But, you know, you go through the process of, you know, fill out their worksheet and what they've done and this and that, and I didn't want to get all anal about that. So I told her, I said, okay, let me tell you, what is it you want to do? Well, she wanted to work for think tanks and do kind of philosophical libertarian stuff. Well, then eventually she did go after, you know, I gave a recommendation. She worked for a while until she had her baby at the Goldwater Institute. She went from intern to me to Goldwater Institute. Now, what happened was, I go, look, you know, there's all kinds of interny stuff. You know, you can sit there and be a slave and do all kinds of whatever. But I tell you what the big thing is. If you can get published, I will sign off on whatever it is. You do some research on, you know, something. We'll come up with something you can do, and we'll whatever. This is what wound up happening. She did a paper, got published in the newspapers here, and it was a big buzz for about 3-4 days on talk radio and everything. She published a paper on the faculty of Arizona State University in her philosophical positions. Zero libertarians.
Really?
So she was like, you know, this is the breakdown of the faculty based on all of her research and what they did and their registration, their party, and kind of class they did. So she, however, she came up with this determination and published that. And I remember making a big deal all over talk radio, and this was 2004, about the philosophy of the faculty at Arizona State University. So within a year after that, you start going there or you're there. We'll talk about that and what's changed when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
This year, you can experience a taste of Libertopia. Libertopia is a voluntary community based on freedom and peace. Visit the three-day festival this October 11th to 14th at Humphrey's Half Moon Inn on the San Diego Bay. With speakers, workshops, parties, and wonderful people, Libertopia has it all. Become a member of this peaceful voluntary community now. Visit Libertopia.org. Tickets and hotel rooms are going quickly, so make sure to reserve yours today. Find out more at Libertopia.org.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, Gabriel Mueller. Okay, let me give you a little bit of his bio. I am currently an economic commentator writer for both Liberty Coin and Precious Metals and GoldMoney.com. We're going to find out about that. I also work at the Liberty Coin Precious Metals store in Scottsdale. That's where we met him. I am a former economics teacher. We're going to talk about that. Background in law and justice studies. I am a self-taught Austrian economist, lives in Scottsdale, also a political activist and huge Ron Paul supporter. Well, let's see. Hey, Gabriel, did you go help Kielski, those guys, make signs this weekend or anything? Oh, wait, I got to push the button, I'm sorry, you there, Gabriel?
Hello?
Yeah. Did you do any activism this weekend?
Unfortunately, no.
Slacktivist. Okay. Well, we'll get you all worked up here in a little bit. Now, tell me about this. So you went to Arizona State University. You get your training in. When did you start? You said libertarianism kind of started to hit you in 03. That's why you were undergrad, you said?
Yeah. Well, that's when I started getting exposed to, I would say, libertarian writers. I remember John Hospers. He was one of the first authors that I read about libertarianism, and I know that he... Gosh, didn't he pass away just a few years ago? And
I barely recognize the name.
I think he ran for the Libertarian Party,
a candidate at one time or something.
Yeah, I think 72 or 76, the first. And then he had a female vice president running.
Oh, yeah, Tony Latham or something. Yeah, exactly. His is the first campaign, and what the claim to fame was is in their campaign, she was the only libertarian to ever receive an electoral college vote.
You're right.
Somebody in the electoral college went, you know what? I vote for her, the libertarian thing, get over it. And they're like, ooh, they didn't like that none too much. You know, the slaves are getting too informed here. Okay. So that's where I remember the name from. Okay. Now, so you kind of get exposed to that. How was it that you heard of him?
Oh, he was just assigned reading in a political theory class.
Assigned reading.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah. Well, that was even before Jennifer, so, you know, it couldn't be, you know, completely 100% communist. But, you know,
it goes to the credit of this professor. She wanted us to be exposed to a lot of ideas, and she liked, I think this was just her personality, she liked controversy. So some kids took to the liberal writers that we read. Some students took to the conservative writer. Some took to the libertarian. Now, hey, I don't like these, you know, these labels, but for the sake of conversation, we'll use them. But, you know, and I think she likes stirring up controversy in the classroom, and controversy turned into discussion, too. So she made me talk in class, which was good, or think.
This is the point that I wonder, you know, you can explain this to me. When she did this, do you think she was just trying to be rounded, the controversy, have the discussion? It was a way that she could interject, you know, libertarianism. I can't imagine a professor that exposes a young person to the concept and the base philosophy, you know, thou shalt leave me alone, of libertarianism, and not think there was going to be a growing support for it. I mean, it's the way of her sneaking it in, or is she just, or like a lot of the press, you know, there was a time, you know, started in the late 90s, I saw the effort, and it went all the way up for like three election cycles to where, all right, fine, you want libertarianism, we're going to tell you what it really is, and go up there, and, yeah. Oh, my goodness, you would let, you know, do away with, and have, and always, and can't, and never, and you know, thinking that the people are going to be, oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, we never go that far, freedom, and it had the exact opposite effect. So I'm wondering, was she more in that camp, or was she trying to sneak it out, or what?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think she was... No, I don't think she had an agenda necessarily. Like I said, she was never, she was left of center. She was liberal or socialistic, possibly we'd say, when it came to economic issues, and she was liberal when it came to her personal issues, libertarian, excuse me, when it came to her personal issues or civil or social issues, and she didn't hide that, you could tell. I think she honestly was just simply trying to provoke conversation, and she was giving the students exposed to a variety of ideas. And
little did she know. Okay.
Little did she know, exactly. It didn't take till 2004 when it was John Kerry versus George Bush, where I looked at both political parties and thought, these guys are the same people. Why would you ever? How can you choose between the two? And, well, why would you choose between the two? So, you know, libertarianism, I was exposed to it in about 2003, I remember, but it didn't start to kick in until 2004, and then it didn't become, you know, part of my heart, so to speak, until 2007 when I heard Ron Paul speaking, and I thought, this guy is speaking the truth, and I want to follow him.
Okay, now this is one thing that I find of interest. I emphasize so much because I was, you know, I was young. I was, you know, I knew what impressed me and what drove and had an impact on my behavior and what, you know, I chose to, you know, philosophies I chose to follow or, you know, kind of learn more about or whatever, you know, and I knew what was BS. And the thing is that I never got the idea that truth emanated from anything in politics, from the Republicans or Democrats, from the media, from politicians, from, you know, in a search for truth, and I would think young people would be looking for the truth as a minimum requirement of paying attention, and I could see that it was going to be a cultural thing. It was going to be just individuals, people kind of growing into it, and the bad guys just dying off. And if you ain't a neon flashing example of it, okay. So as you go through this and you start to, all of a sudden you go and you get your teaching certificate, I would imagine. Was that your goal? You're like, I'm going to be a teacher?
No. Well, yes, but I worked for a charter school. So you don't have to have a teaching certificate to be a teacher in charter school.
Well, do you have a degree in economics or something? Or did you get a degree?
Oh, no. Yeah, I have a degree. Well, I have a law degree, but when it came to economics, I just showed them that I was writing articles on economic issues for economic websites. And then they said, well, you need to go, long story short, they said, you need to go get certified. And so I took a test and I passed it. So, but,
certified by what?
It's certified by the state of Arizona. It's called like an Arizona Education Efficiency Program or some sort of assessment program. And yeah, I took that test and I passed that.
Okay, is that the same one they do to get certified for other teachers?
Yes, yes and no, but it's not a teaching certificate necessarily. It's just an assessment for a specific...
Okay, we'll drill down on this and make sure we get the difference. I find that interesting. You know, is that you know, you got to get permission slip from the man to teach somebody, and I want to know what the criteria is, what the difference is. You got a law degree? Seriously, a law degree? Now you practice for the bar? We're going to find out all this stuff. We're going to get to know our new best friend Gabriel Mueller when we come back here and declare your independence in just a little bit.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now, there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay. I got a little story here to tell you about our little, non-slacktivist thing that's going on this week, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But first, we want to pick up where we left off, is that, he goes into being a teacher at a charter school, Gabriel Mueller, our guest, as an economics teacher. Now, when did you start doing that? Are you still doing that?
No, I'm currently not an economics teacher. Currently employed with any sort of charter school. I'm just doing full-time writing and working for Liberty Point.
Okay, so this was how long did you do the economics teaching?
I did it for a year.
And this was, how rewarding? I mean, is that something that you liked? You're like, next, or what?
No, very, very rewarding. Good question. I'd like to continue to be a teacher and especially an economics teacher, because our economics are so, to say it less articulately, so messed up. So
what age were you teaching?
Teaching 10th graders, right around, anywhere from 14, 15 to 16.
Oh, that's a good time. Okay.
Exactly.
So why did you stop doing that?
Oh, I just wanted to move on and do a little bit more writing, and then also the opportunity came up with Liberty Coin, and I know that I listened to the interview with Richard Lambertus last week, and working for Richard's just awesome. He's a great boss, a great intelligent guy, and so I enjoy doing that. So,
hey, he's like a nice guy. I like him.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy, and I have the opportunity now to speak with adults, and every day I'm providing them with an education, because people are coming into the store. As you probably said in the background, I work for Liberty Coin Precious Metal. People are looking to invest in gold and silver, and I can kind of give them an economic, 101, so to speak, about what's going on.
So, well, that's one thing I was talking to Richard is that, I wanted to make sure that when we sent people over there that they were going to have their questions answered, and the way... Yeah, we went into the shop, how was it, Wednesday. There was a fundraiser thing we had in Fountain Hills that you guys got to go to. That was great. And it was right down the street from y'all. So you guys go to that and get to see some of the boys. And the thing that was interesting, that fundraiser lacked one thing, a bunch of the conservatives. Because what happens is, and I stated this to Richard before we went, I said, it's going to be interesting because I know all of the people that are friends and supporters of Mark and me and all the stuff we do, and we're just, you know, grew up with these guys, you know, as adults doing all this stuff for the last 20 years. And, you know, but it's a contentious election. And a lot of these guys that are the Republicans, they've signed on to and, you know, committee in support of and doing doctors for and lawyers with and everything for Jeff Flake running for U.S. Senate. And if they got caught going to any kind of associated political part, and they know all us, we're just like, hey, we don't care, man. You know, $25 to pay for your portion of food or something. I mean, you know, it's just, but they were like, hell no. That you could tell it drew right down the line. It was the libertarian, anarchist, hardcore, leave me aloneist, whatever. And anybody that had anything to do with Republican wanting to be on the Christmas card list, they didn't come. So it's like you're going, wow. So friendships actually go. I mean, it doesn't bother us. It probably bothers them more than it does us. But we were just like, you know, that's interesting. That's interesting to see. And you can see as times get worse, that's going to get more and more prevalent. You know, you got to throw in with certain people and philosophies. And at a young age, you made the decision to throw in with what? What is it that you see that you're the community that you're in? How do you define it?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just it's a really good question. I wasn't really going for the community at first, even though I do appreciate that. And I think that once people get into the libertarian, so to speak, community, they find that it's a strong one. But it was me, the ideas that were the most powerful, that they were the most logically defensible. So to me, it was a no-brainer. Now, I'm not saying it happened instantly. It came over time. I think, 2003 to 2007. But every little bit I was learning about the philosophical side, about the economic side, about the practical side, about libertarianism, made sense. And so to me, it was a no-brainer to accept it.
You know, to them, it's not like that. It's not a make sense for even posterity. I mean, it's not a make sense for how long. It's a make sense of who gets to be in charge. You know, one of the discussion groups that I belong to, a lot of these guys are participants at, and kind of the line is, you know, between this conservative Republican thing and the libertarian, you're still voting thing. The line comes down to, you know, who's going to be in charge? Because I didn't go to the meeting this last month, and it's a two-parter that went in September and in October, is why people need to be governed. I mean, that was kind of the base of the philosophical base of the talk. And it's kind of a forum. Everybody participates and so on. But, you know, I already know where this goes. I don't want to get in an argument. I'm going, yeah, blah, 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 blah. That may apply to, you know, the entire rest of the planet. So you're going to use majority force against the individual that doesn't think he gets to be ruled by the majority. I go, then what?
Yeah.
And they go, well, you got to subject too. I go, then you're just like them. I mean, why are we even having this discussion? Seriously. So So that's what it's come. They're going, yeah, but we got all these numbers and stuff and how and people have to everything, but they totally lost the individual. And I'm going, there's no sense in even fighting with these people. I'm just waiting for you to die off. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's that simple. I just, you know, when you die off, they don't have to worry about it.
Right.
I'm not going to try and hasten it or anything, but I'm not going to be sitting here and, you know, cheering for your health care, you know? So So in your position, as you come through this and you start learning Austrian economics, what was the biggest influence you had in Austrian economics? I mean, what book, what author you read? You went, ding, okay, I get it. Now I can argue it. I can advocate for it to students. I understand it. What gave you that leap?
You know, that's a good question. I definitely was leaning towards libertarianism, and then I thought, I didn't find Austrian economics until about 2008 during the financial crisis. And here I'm watching the news. I'm in law school as well, and I'm seeing this, and no one could explain this. No one can explain why we've had this huge macro boom when it comes to the housing sector and why it's starting to crumble. And then I just started doing some searching, and I came across the Mises Institute, and I thought they had articles about booms and busts, macro booms and busts, and how those are started when there's an influx, an increase of credit or liquidity in the economy, and that money runs to sectors, producer sectors, consumer sectors, and then there's the boom. But because there's no savings, over time the liquidity runs out, and there's the bust. And it's just that simple. So to answer your question, forgive me, I got exposed to Austrian economics, and I started reading writers like Mises and Rothbard and Hayek and Salerno and Woods and, the list goes on. And I thought, these guys are explaining economic theory. There's explaining economic theory the clearest, the most thorough, you know, in a very thorough way. And it started to make sense that way as well, to be.
You know, one of the most practical books that, you know, I've read Tom Wood's Meltdown, you know, and then Charles mm-hmm. Goyette, you know, the Dollar Meltdown. And yep. Richard, your boss, he was like, you know, I read two books. It was, Schiff's Crash Proof 2.0 and Charles Goyette's The Dollar Meltdown. I go, well, then you're good. I mean, you know, what else are you going to learn? And the one thing that Charles did in his book is just, I was his producer for 2.5 years and lived this to him, and he explained so well to people so they could understand, and he did the same thing as an author. Look, this is not complicated. Let me explain it to you. Now I understand. They're the bad guys. So, more about the bad guys and the good guys, Gabriel Mueller, when we come back.
Before I became a customer of Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, I called one of the internet companies that sells gold. I didn't like the impersonal hard sell or the fact they were in another state. Liberty's different. I could walk in their store, look them in the eye, see, feel, and walk out with what I'd bought. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery, just great prices. And Liberty's one of the biggest gold sellers in the Southwest. Their experts took the time to get to know me and my investment needs. There's so many reasons I'm now a Liberty Coin and Precious Metals customer, but the most important is I trust Liberty. Remember, they're right here in Scottsdale. So drop in or call Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Or on the web at libertycpm.com. Liberty.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From?
I want to break free from your lies. Yes.
Lies. That are televised by the big bad guys. I gotta be a rapper. Okay, this is what I want to get to is, you know, Gabriel Mueller, you know, one thing I got a question I got to ask that's been, you know, gnawing at me, law school. Okay. So you're an attorney. Did you get your bar thing or you just go, I'm good?
No, I'm not an attorney. I have a law degree. I have a master's in jurisprudence, so to speak, or a doctorate in jurisprudence, as they call it. But I have not taken a bar, no.
Okay. Now, you know, I mean, do you feel like you're missing out on something? You're like, I wasted my time doing all that. I mean, where are you at, you know, in your philosophical and career development? Are you where you want to be? I mean, what are you trying to do? I mean, I got law degree. I got economics professor kind of thing going on here. I got all of a sudden you're going, you know what? I see where this is all going, and I want to be in the precious metal business.
Yeah, I think all of that. My ultimate goal is to help people and tell people about libertarianism. I mean, how will I do that? The means change all the time, but my end is to spread the word. And so one way to do that is through economics and being an economics teacher. Another way is being a writer. A third way is, you know, just meeting people at our store in Scottsdale and shaking their hands and answering their questions and,
But what do you see? You're rescuing minds and people and asses? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, this is what we always, I said, you know, it's all about how many minds you can free. And it gets to the point where it's how many asses you can save. Okay. Because, you know, it's Schiff said it really good one time. He goes, look, ignorance of the truth now is a choice. He's going, there's enough information out there, and push the truth button with the internet, that if you don't know what's going on, it's your own fault. Okay? Right. So I have no sympathy for those that are, you know, going to go down with the ship. And it's now, this word picture came to mind. Is everybody screaming for their turn as the ship's going down? They want to get elected and put me in charge and I'll do it better and everything. And it's almost like you got this big parade and line of people that want their turn at the wheel on the Titanic. You know, it's kind of, they all got their life jackets on, and on the other side, maybe there's no more lifeboats and it's done, but everybody's going to run through the wheelhouse with their turn of touching the wheel to say they did as it goes beneath the waves. And I'm going, wow, man, you know, there's, where'd that come from? So I'm going, all right, so you're in a position to where you think you understand what's coming and you want to help people. What do you think what's coming?
Really great question. I like the metaphor.
I ask a lot of great questions. So I'm here.
I like the metaphor of the Titanic. You're right. It almost doesn't matter who's going to be in charge because there's just this moving object which is going to crash. I mean, I guess you just simply look at the math of the matter, into the arithmetic of the matter. We've got a number of unfunded liabilities on the federal budget. Something, if you total up Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and you go out 20, 30 years from now, it comes out to be something like, gosh, $75 trillion. I'm forgetting the exact term, and I think the figure changes all the time. But
it doesn't matter what the total is. It gets to a certain point that never, or not, or impossible. Once you hit that point, then the amount doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You know, and they know it, too. That's why they just keep, you know, printing up more gazillions and goes to their buddies first, of course. So what is the survival technique for after? That's one thing. Everybody goes, oh, it's this number. It's this number. It's a big number. And so I remember when was it? It was in the early 2000s. And the Congress had come back and they wanted to sell the conservative Republican version of, we're going to put your entitlement money, your Social Security and all that in a trust fund. Well, I thought it was already in a Social Security trust fund. No. We spent all that. So we're going to put it in a super trust fund. Okay? Trust us. And I'm going, and they went on town hall meetings all around the country, and they would go in every single little auditorium of whatever the heck, and they were preaching this with PowerPoint and all this other stuff, saying, you see this? Well, it went over here, and we're going to put it in a special little, you know, file in a cabinet in, you know, the government. And I mean, literally, that's what they were using, icons of file cabinets, like somehow, and that was what they sold it before, is that your money and your Social Security was yours, and it wasn't going, well, we're going to really put a special label on it and never really get it. And I'm going, wow, man, these guys are rich. So I'm going, okay, so I want to make sure, as in, you know, they're really laying it on. So I'm just going, what's the truth, though? When you have somebody comes in, you know, I'm here to buy me some metals, you're going, the truth is what?
The truth is I can't tell you when it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. Do I think it's going to happen?
What's going to happen?
It happening is some sort of breakdown in the financial system or something of where the dollar becomes so depreciated. But the dollar's going to become, it's going to become depreciated. Two things have to happen. One is there has to be an excessive supply of it, right? So we're seeing that with the easing and the mortgage-backed security purchases and the government just buying up toxic assets and turning those over and replacing those with fresh reserves in the large banks' accounts. But so the supply is there, the demand, which is another aspect of every commodity or every sort of item, the demand is still there. For the United States dollars, it's the world's reserve currency. It's used in 95% of all sort of international financial transactions. All oil contracts, or nearly all oil contracts, are denominated in dollars. So the thing is, the demand for dollars is still there. But the moment the demand for dollars drops internationally, that's the day that the dollar is going to lose all its value.
Well, you can see every other alternative currency and money system and whatever lining up at the start line.
You're right.
I mean, they're sitting there stretching out. They're leaning forward. They're putting their feet into the starting blocks. They're on their knees. They're shaking their arms. They're putting their fingers on the line. They're getting ready for the starting pistol. And then all of a sudden, you're going to wake up Monday morning, and the dollar's gone.
Yeah, that's right. And our politicians and our statesmen and women, they're going to, first of all, probably not see this. But if they do, they're going to try to scare us with it. And that's why they're going to push for another bailout of some industry, or mostly the banks usually. And they're going to use, I think, some sort of scare tactic to do that. And I think there's going to be a lot of financial disruption when it happens, no question. But it's not like buildings are going to be, you know, falling over and there's going to be explosions in cities. And it's just that there's going to be a reset button. And everything that's denominated in dollars is going to be reset. And I think if you have real assets, commodities, gold and silver, you're not going to feel the reset as hard because you're going to maintain your purchasing power.
In time. Okay, let me give you an example, from just, life example of how I think this is going to happen. Yeah. Here in Arizona, were you here a few years ago when they broke that gas line from Tucson? They were doing some housing, all of a sudden gasoline starts spewing everywhere and we're short of gas here in the valley. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember reading about that, yeah.
Okay, this is what would happen. I mean, it was like, midnight, you're waiting, you're following gas trucks, you're sitting there waiting, you're paying $5 a gallon, whatever, to get your gas because they cut a fuel line that was coming from Texas. It went up through Tucson, comes up to Arizona, and it was a special kind of blend, and it was MTBE, whatever, ethanol, kind of whatever you got to have, and they passed a law, and you can't, and had gazillion tanker trucks from L.A. saying, hey, man, we'll give you the gas. Oh, no. Janet Napolitano, head of the Gestapo now. She's like, oh, no, environmental, whatever, and we can't, and they drug it out. And finally, okay, I wave, and you can have gasoline. And it was the most ridiculous thing. And what happened was it was all based on, the gasoline was there. The solution was there. We had, the free market will provide. We have need. Price goes up. You got enough tanker trucks in the West Coast saying, man, we'd be wanting to give us some gasoline to Phoenix.
Yeah.
But everybody was waiting. People would go and they'd get big 5-gallon jerry can stuff, go and get a bunch of gasoline cap, whatever. They'd bring your pickup truck, get an exit, put a sign up that says gas here, and people would stop and get it. They pay $5, $10 a gallon, whatever. The free market will provide. What happens, though, is the exact same thing is going to happen here. They're waiting for a permission slip from the government. They're waiting for an opportunity for them to be able to save themselves. They want some kind of a starting pistol, say it's okay to survive. We have to break that cultural mindset and already know that we got Bitcoin, or we're using silver dime cards, or we're using bullion, or we're using people like Gabriel Mueller. Going to save us. Generation Next. Here's the guy right here. Gabriel, thanks for coming on. I know we got a lot more to say. Go ahead and give out a couple of websites you want to make sure everybody gets.
Well, I would just say tell people to look at libertycm.com, that's Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, and check our store out, and look up Mises.org, look up...
LibertyCPM.com, get them started. Gabriel, right. Thanks for coming on, man. We could go on and on and on. Stay right there. I want to talk to you. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not
welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, this is what we're going to do. In this hour, we're going to be talking to Edward Fortune New Jersey weed man. Okay, now we heard about him from James Babb, and what happened was, here's a gentleman that is an advocate for marijuana, as you know, for whatever reason you fill in the blank with, but you know, he's an activist. He's like, you know, I'm a marijuana party activist, politician running for doing smoking in front of the Liberty Bell. Arrest me, I dare you. Here we go. And he gets a fully informed jury kind of thing going on. They said not guilty. Well, they had a hung jury or something, but they're going, oh, yeah. And I think it was a pound of marijuana. He goes, yeah, I get right here, pound. You know, so they go, are you guilty? Guilty, guilty, guilty. Well, somebody said not guilty. So they're going to go through, the, you know, the pro. We'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, what's interesting is that out of high school in New Jersey, he goes into the National Guard. You know, he goes to college. He gets an honorable discharge from the National Guard. Then he enlists in the Marine Corps. And he has an asthma attack, was medically discharged. And after being discharged from the Marine Corps, he changed his name to Edward and enlisted in the United States Army. Well, there he, you know, He used marijuana to control his asthma, and, you know, and he gets married, and he finally gets an honorable discharge from the Army, and then he became a coast-to-coast trucker, and then, you know, became a Rastafarian. And that's my religion, to smoke marijuana. You know, if I had to pick a religion, that would have a very enticing trait right there. So let's go ahead and get to Edward. Now, how are you referred to? They call you Weed Man or what?
Yeah, a lot of people call me the New Jersey weed man. Most people don't even know my real name, but yes, you're right. My name is Edward, and I did change my name to join the Army. I was born as Robert.
You know, that's interesting. Why would you be certainly, you know, advocate of marijuana, but you're definitely didn't have a problem going in the military. What up with that?
Oh, I mean, I come from a pretty, I guess, stable, conservative family, and all my male relatives all joined the Army. I had every intention of joining the Army myself. But as a kid, I had asthma. And like you said, the first time I joined the National Guard, I didn't have a problem. I was able to get through it. When I was in the Marines, though, I had an asthma attack, and they discharged me for that. And I was so upset. I spent 2 years fighting that, trying to get back in the Marines. And then at some point, I gave up on trying to be in the Marines. And I just switched my first name and my middle name and enlisted in the Army. You know, nowadays you can't do that because of computers and stuff like that. It was a fraudulent enlistment, I'll admit it. But I did my 4 years in the Army, no problem. Occasionally, I smoked marijuana while I was in the Army. And I didn't have a problem.
Well, heck, they should have you as a freaking poster boy for someone that wanted so bad to go into the military, he changed his name. They should put you on commercials, man. All right. So you go in, you do that, you get out, and, you know, tell me about this foray into Rastafarianism. You know, first explain it to me. You know, I kind of get a thumbnail sketch of what it is. It's you know, it's my religion to smoke marijuana. But, I mean, is it more than that? I mean, explain it to me.
Yeah, it's more than that. You know, I grew up in a Baptist family. You know, when I was a kid, for some reason, though, I just couldn't get into church. It didn't fit me. It didn't feel right. I had my own images of church. I'm not trying to be critical right now, but you know, I'm a black man, and I grew up in the 70s where people were talking about, you know, black power and looking back at black history. And I looked at the church as, you know, like it was a justification for slavery and things like that is how I was originally looked. So it made me explore other religions. And just like, you know, not to bash Christianity, but just like, I took it as, you know, this was the religion that the slave owner put on the slaves. And, okay, we're not slaves no more, so we should be free to look at whatever religion we want. Well, and that's the attitude I took as a teenager.
Well, you've also, you know, forayed into politics. Tell me about that. I mean, I'm looking, we have on the live video feed, you know, a lot of pictures of you and so on. And and that's a pretty nice van you got there. And, you know, it's logoed with you, New Jersey Weed Man, and it has, you know, a lot of, you know, pretty graphics and so on. But you run for office, do you not?
Yes. Since 1997, I got busted in New Jersey for marijuana, obviously. And ever since then, I've promised that every year to get the issue of marijuana legalization on the ballot in New Jersey, and how I feel it is, I personally run for office under the Legalized Marijuana Party. So just about every year, I run for office. I get thousands of votes. I've become the political gadfly of New Jersey. There's always little articles about, oh, he's running again. Even when I moved out to California, technically, I never changed my address in New Jersey. I've always registered in New Jersey. So I even still run for office in New Jersey every year. But this year, I'm running for Congress in the 3rd District.
Now, well, be careful. They'll get you for all kinds of, you know, ouch-quit-it stuff, you know, if they don't get you as a resident in New Jersey. You know what I mean?
Oh, they tried that a couple times. I dot all my I's and cross all my T's. You know, I'm good.
All right.
My registration, everything is still there. I mean, there was a huge case last year where the state of New Jersey booted Carl Lewis off the ballot for not being registered. And people complain, well, how come you let Weed Man do it? Well, I batted my eyes and crossed my T's.
So tell me how this has evolved since you've been doing this since the 90s. You know, over a decade of this process, I mean, are you laughed at less? Are you there? You have concerned to them more? I mean, what has been the evolution of the process?
Way less. In 1997, you know, when I was publicly running for office and publicly talking about marijuana, I was like the fool. You know, people openly said to me, you know, go home and smoke. Shut up. You know, like what are you doing? You're going to talk your way into prison and things like that. Now, total opposite. Most people think I'm right. Some people give me credit for just putting the whole issue of marijuana, medical marijuana, on the political landscape in New Jersey. Without even me giving interviews, a lot of times newspaper articles, if you Google it, newspaper articles in New Jersey, when they're talking about medical marijuana, they'll mention me and refer to me. Calling myself the New Jersey Weed Man, I mean, I really put myself out there, and, you know, as a result, I've got a lot of political enemies on the state side.
Well, who are your political enemies? I mean, you're building up a brand to the point when it does get legalized, you know, they're going to have your, you know, endorsement brand on packs of marijuana cigarettes at, you know, 7-Eleven. You know,
I wish.
Don't laugh, man. This is how it happens. And well, you know, your opposition... Go ahead.
I tried to change my name a couple years ago to njweedman.com. And what the state argued was just what you're saying, that I was trying to brand myself
a criminal.
They said that if they allowed me to be NJ Weedman, New Jersey Weedman, you'll have someone wanting to be Mr. Coke Man, someone wanting to be Mr. Heroin Man.
So?
And that was the justification on not letting me change my name.
Or somebody wants to be Mr. AK-47. I mean, you know, I saw that they were having, people would have, like, AK-47 as license plates, and they started taking them away. They said, oh, no, you can't. I'm like, whoa, free speech? Oh, not if the man says you can't. More. With Edward Weedman.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, they're goose-stepping. Here they come. Street in L.A. They're going from medical marijuana clinic to medical marijuana clinic, telling you how it is. You know, and this is coming from, you know, a president got elected kind of on this, you know, got the marijuana vote. I don't know how that's going to work this time with Libertarian Gary Johnson, that was former governor, saying, you know, let's stop the drug war. You know that? Oh, but they're gearing up, man. Oh, they're gonna. Oh, here come the tanks. Battle of the Bulge, man. Every time I you know, it's that, you know, the Panzer song, and I can tell you, every time I see just the emotions that brings up these. This is how they're. Oh, we're goose stepping down the street, going to tell everybody how to do whatever we want to tell them.
And it's always, you know, someone that's just out there saying, no, Edward, New Jersey weed man, fortune, you know, this is, you know, and Fija, you know, there's a, you know, the soapbox, you get to complain, you know, the jury box, you know, you get to kind of, you know, evaluate the law, and, you know, it gets down to the cartridge box, and we don't want to go there. So right now we're having some success, and Edward's showing us how to do this at the jury box. He just had a case to where he had a hung jury, 7-5. Now, who was the 7 and who was the 5?
7 for acquittal.
Really? Did you get to do a jury polling or anything and talk to him?
No, not this trial. I had another trial a few years ago that I was allowed to do that. But this trial here, no, the judge went in chambers and did it. He didn't want that. He didn't want the press to write about that.
Wait. You mean the judge went in chambers and what? I mean, don't you get to talk to the jury?
He didn't let us do it this time. That's what I'm saying. Last time it happened, I did get to pull the jury, and I had 5 of them who talked openly about not agreeing with the war on drugs. This time, the judge admonished me several times for what he called my jury nullification tactics and my trying to scuttle the judiciary process. At the end of the trial, when they voted 7-5, He polled them publicly, and then he went in the back to find out what the makeup was and all that, and released them from the back, and no one got to talk to him.
Whoa. Let me get this straight. They have a jury, 7-5 in your favor, and the judge...
We didn't know at the time.
They just said hung jury or whatever. So he takes them in the back, and he's like, all right, explain it to me. Which one of you malcontents is the guy? Oh, 7 of you, never mind.
I believe that something like that did occur.
Oh, this is so messed up, man. I mean, this is, you just want to backhand the whole system. All right. So then
the prosecutor at that point elected to retry me. He had that option, and he made it known right then and there in court. He was kind of upset. He thought he had.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I didn't deny anything. I said, yes, I had this marijuana. I had this whole pound of marijuana. This pound of marijuana to me will last a little bit more than a month.
Of you smoking a pound of marijuana in 6 weeks?
I said.
You're a freaking man. Holy crap.
No, I said about half of it I would have smoked, and the other half I would have cooked. But that half a pound would have lasted me about 6 weeks, and I probably would have ate most of the whatever I cooked in that 6 weeks also. But I compared it to people who buy a carton of cigarettes, people who buy gallons of milk instead of, you know, a little pint of milk every day. You know, you buy a gallon. Why do I have to run to some drug dealer and buy me an eighth of marijuana every day? Why can't I buy a pound of marijuana and use my pound of marijuana over the course of several weeks? And I told them my medical conditions, why I have, why I use marijuana. I have bone cancer, by the way. I was diagnosed in 2000. I've had several operations. Right now I'm in an experimental drug treatment program here in Santa Monica, California, for my bone cancer. And all my doctors are totally aware that I use marijuana instead of any of the prescription drugs I could. I mean, I could get a prescription for anything, any painkillers. If I wanted to,
yeah, really, your bone cancer.
I don't even want to use them. But I mean, if I wanted to, I could buy them and sell them if I wanted to.
Well, I know Steve Cubby, and this has been a big advocacy of his that marijuana is what's keeping him alive.
Oh yeah, I'm totally aware of Steve Cubby. Been aware of him for years. In fact, we're Facebook friends. I've never actually met him. We've communicated a few times.
And, you know, here's a gentleman, he's a libertarian activist, and, you know, it's a long story, we can go on and on about Steve Cubby, similar situation, you know, it's just the man wants to go out, he went to Canada, you know, for a while for the Canadian government to leave him alone for until it became politically football for him, you know, not being in Canada. And this is, I'm interested in what the Fija argument was. I mean, how did you get that in? Were you your own attorney, or did you have an attorney?
Yeah.
What?
No, that was part of my tactic to represent myself. This is what the judge complained about. But I represented myself. I told my story. And I know in New Jersey, Article 1, Paragraph 6 specifically says in all prosecutions or indictments, the jury may be told the truth, and the jury may judge the law as well as the facts. And how do they get around? How does the state attempt to get around?
By making sure you're able to practice before the bar, and if you do not toe the line, they take your ability to practice before the bar away.
Exactly. So this is why I had to represent myself. I tell people all the time that I am forced to represent myself because no lawyer who wants to protect his career is going to put on a jury nullification defense, which I really call an offense. I really don't feel defensive in court. I feel like I'm putting on an offense. I am beating the state's butt in court publicly. And my jury, as I told you, 7-5, endorsed my tactic. And I'm going, in this retrial, I'm going to be more offensive.
Okay, now how much press did you get on this?
Oh, I got plenty of press. I got nationwide press.
They
got
to get you, man. They're, you know, all of a sudden you'll wake up dead or something. I mean, there is you represent an avalanche to the state. This is, you know, hell no. So I mean, how much of a threat do you see? I mean, not necessarily. I wouldn't say that they'd take you out because that would just, you know, make it worse for them. But I mean, you know, they're not holding back any. They're not, you know, limited their resources towards let's get, you know, Weed Man.
Let me tell you what happened to me last year. Now, I've been fighting this case for the last 2 years. Last year, as I was gearing up for trial was supposed to be last year on October the 18th. I had money last year. My plans were, you know, to put on commercials, to do certain things. You know, I had some cash. On September the 4th, I know all the dates. September the 4th last year, the prosecutor, Michael Luciano, on my case in Burlington County, New Jersey, called the DEA in Los Angeles, complaining about me and complaining about my public advocacy, the fact that I had this marijuana stop and I was funding my own defense. This is probably what came out also. But he called several times in September, and you know, the DEA came, the Los Angeles DEA, the Los Angeles-based DEA came and raided my dispensary.
And took September your 13th. Goodies. We'll talk about it when we come back.
All my money.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Rich now voices can't be heard. Just wanna scream it louder and louder and louder. What the hell are we fighting for?
I tell you what the American way is now. You know, they're like, you know, it's our way from the capital of America in Washington, D.C. You got a prosecutor in New Jersey saying this guy, man, he's funding this. He's not even had to pay for a lawyer. He's going around flying back. We're trying to, you know, crush him. And he's out there making a bunch of money in his medical marijuana clinic thing. And, you know, can't we do something about it, Mr. DEA man? Well, yes, we can. And they go and raid and took everything. Everything. Now, of course, Edward learned his lesson. You know, the Weed Man says, you know what? I do this again. I wouldn't have everything in one place for them to take because they will. Well, they did. Now, this is just go ahead and talk to Edward. Now, tell me, Edward, you know, this came out in the trial somehow that there was these kind of conversations from the prosecutor with the DEA. Did that come out?
Yeah. The only thing is the prosecutor just said, hey, I don't have that kind of power. You know, but my probable cause statements from the prosecutor, from the DEA for the search warrant, it has each time they talk to the prosecutor in it, and it also has unnamed state official. It doesn't say that person's name. I think it was someone in the New Jersey Attorney General's office, but I can't. That.
So they come in and take everything, the DEA, and they said, sucks to be you. Did you get charged with any crime?
I didn't get charged with nothing. It
of
was a
course.
Coppery. It was a coppery, you know, a cop robbery. And like I said,
coppery.
They took all of my money. Like, I got left with just the money that was in my pocket that day. They took all of my marijuana, which is money. Like I said, they took all my cameras. They took all my videos. I had a box of videos. I mean, if you look on the internet, I have a lot of videos out there. I've been doing a lot of videos. I've had cameras for years. They took all my cameras.
They took my phones. They took everything. And, you know, it really disrupted my life. Like to the point where I haven't been able to pay child support, like everything. My dogs, they took my dogs and put them in the shelter. I had to pay to get my dogs back out of the shelter.
Well, did they were trying to send a message. Did you get it?
Yeah, they did. Well, they sent it. I received it. I haven't complied with it, you know, but yes, they sent a message. The message was, get out of this business. What can I say?
They see the medical marijuana industry as an enormously lucrative thing that is competing with their monopoly on, we got our own special deal with the cartels going and paying off the police and law enforcement, and then, of course, whatever seizure stuff we get. And everything. I mean, it's an industry that who loves it more than anybody else are the drug dealers and law enforcement. They're the ones that make all the money. You start making it legalized, and all of a sudden that black market premium on everything goes down. So now you have the industry is making a bunch of money out there that's funding more of being legalized and a change in the culture, like exactly what you're doing. Got to nip it in the bud, okay? So literally.
I believe that. And I also believe that my public advocation of jury nullification, like I've been an advocate of jury nullification for as long as I've been an advocate for marijuana legalization. And my public advocation of jury nullification in New Jersey, and I've used these court cases to bring light to it, is also seen as a huge threat by New Jersey officials who call it anarchy and this, that, and the other. I've had several different lawyer types and judges totally just complain about my advocation.
Of course! Of course!
This raid that was at the behest of New Jersey state officials, I think it was brought on to bring pressure on me to accept some type of plea deal.
Well, they offered you anything? What have they offered you?
They went from 10 years, which is what I would have got if I'm convicted, to 6 years, to 5, to 3, to 9 months. If they sentenced me to 9 months, I actually wouldn't even go to prison. I would go to the county jail for a little while and then be released. I mean, that does sound good, but you know what? At this point, I'll never ever take a plea bargain again. I took one 12 years ago, and I always regretted it because at the end of that trial, when I decided to take the plea bargain, I did the same arguments. By the way, I said the law was wrong, not me. At the end of that trial, that judge did let me pull the jury, and I had five that time. Five people raised their hands that they would have acquitted me if I hadn't taken the plea. But I took the plea on the third day. I just felt pressured. They offered us this bribe, and that's what it is. You bribe your right. They bribe you out of your right to a fair trial.
Well, I'm interested that they let you pull the jury and not even go through the trial. I thought that was interesting.
Well, yeah. His name was Judge Thompson. Judge Thompson was definitely interested in how this was working. He thought it was a unique case. He even talked about it a few times separately. But he definitely was interested in it. He wanted to know, and he let it out in the Philadelphia Inquirer and wrote all about it and how I had five jurors that were on my side, and I shouldn't have took that plea. And I did this. I tried to withdraw my plea.
Well, how long did you serve on that?
I actually spent 2 years in prison.
Oh!
Two years to
think about it.
But here's what happened on that. They offered me a plea that if I take this deal, I would get 3 to 6 months in prison, and then I would go home on this IST program, they called it. A month after I was in prison, I get a letter in the mail saying that I'm not eligible for this IST program. So, again, I'm screaming bloody murder. They bamboozled me. It took 18 months before I actually got out of prison and put into that IST program. And then the IST officer, 4 months into it, put me back in prison for 5 months because I kept talking about legalizing marijuana.
A federal judge
intervened in the state and ordered the state to release me, said that my imprisonment at this point was a violation of my right to free speech. The only reason why they were violating my parole was because I was an advocate for the legalization of marijuana.
And they're demeanor has improved since then. Not okay. No, so I'm wow. All right. So in light of all this, you're like, you know what? I need to make me some money. So what'd you do?
I moved to California. And like I said, I moved to California. I was doing well. I had a collective, but my family still lives in New Jersey. I flew back and forth to New Jersey. You know, like I said, I was doing well. It didn't cost much, $500-$600, jump on a plane, go to New Jersey, spend a weekend, spend a few days. And the trip that I went home for, I was replenishing my stock of marijuana in New Jersey. That's what happened. I flew back. Yeah, by the way, don't tell any terrorists, but, you know, you can fly with marijuana. You know, I was flying with marijuana every time I went back to New Jersey. And I flew home with a pound of marijuana, got in my rental car, drove to my family home, was at my family home all day, and then that night I decided to go to a hotel, and on my way to a hotel, right down the street from my house, I got pulled over from my ex-wife's house. I got pulled over by a New Jersey State Trooper. At the time, I thought, oh, my God, were they following me? Like, how is this happening?
What did he pull you over for?
Because my front tires crossed the white line at an intersection. I stopped. You know,
because you can.
Light.
Got it. Okay, yep. Because you can. You yep, black man with dreadlocks, you're getting stopped. That's just the way it is. Driving while black. I got it. All right.
I call it driving while dreaded.
Right. So, you know, it's whatever the new excuse is. So they pull you over, and how did they get a search of your vehicle?
Well, he asked me, and I said no. I even have it on video, me saying no. What happened, though, was, you know, in the computer, they have all your records. They know who you are. You know.
So that was probable cause enough to search?
He said he smelled it.
Of course he did.
And then the next thing you know, he was searching the car, and bam, I was down to marijuana. I went to jail. And that happened on April Fool's Day, by the way, 2010. And I said, Nate was the fool for arresting me.
Okay, this is what, when we come back, we'll find out that Edward opened another clinic in L.A.
Liberty Coin and Precious Metals lets me meet face-to-face with an expert who takes the time to know me and my investment needs. You can't get that kind of personal attention on the web or from a faraway company. I trust Liberty. Visit their Scottsdale store or call 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Liberty Coin and Precious Metals. Liberty.
Did you know that FreeAid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization? At FreeAid, we support volunteers who provide first aid. We do outreach to the public about health and safety, and we bring together medically skilled freedom lovers. FreeAid is made possible by your generous support. Donors can receive great gifts like first aid kits, t-shirts, silver dime cards, and hoodies. The FreeAid Silver Dime Card Project is sponsored in part by Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Freedom's Phoenix, and Don't Tread on Meme. Visit fr33aid.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. From the BEA. Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. All right, well, I'm glad we're having this conversation with Edward, but I want to get to this one point. I know you got, you know, a couple things in this last segment. One, I know you're going to have a retry. It's coming up here real soon, and to help with your lifestyle and your ability to do so, because they try and drive you into the ground, man. They're just like, how's it working out for you, being able to make all these plane trips back and forth and doing costing money, and damn it, and they tried and they took everything away from you. And so what did you do? You opened up another medical marijuana clinic, did you not?
Yep, just this weekend, just passed. First day was this Saturday. In fact, in 2 hours, it'd be the grand opening.
Well, isn't this right in the middle of them shutting down a whole bunch of ones? And did you get the letter from the DEA saying, uh-uh?
No. I didn't get it. they at some point, probably will get around to giving me one also. Well, we'll deal with that when it happens.
Well, you're not keeping everything in the back room of that facility now, are you?
No. No. And we're located directly across the street from USC General Hospital, and it's called USC Meds, United States Collective Medications, directly across the street from General Hospital.
Okay, now you keep saying that collective thing. What does that mean? Is that some method by which you do distribution to club members or something? What are you talking about?
Yes, yes. Everyone who comes in basically joins and becomes a member. We at some point will get into growing, and it's like it's a sharing thing. It's a collective thing. You know, which sometimes sounds almost communist, but yeah, it's a sharing thing.
Well, you need to get your mouth up to the microphone. I'm starting to lose you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
You know, that's the definition that was given in law in California, that we can have a collective. The government in LA is opposed actually to storefront just marijuana stores. So if you have a collective, we have growing on location, we have participation of members, there's a membership issue, you know.
So you can't get marijuana legalized or passed in California unless we stamp a collective label on it, and then it's okay. So I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yep.
So, all right, okay. So you opened it back up again. Is there some kind of permitting process you have to go through, a notification or piece of paper you got to sign with somebody?
Yes. Again, when DEA came, they just stole everything. They didn't do anything towards my state-issued marijuana certificates or anything.
Oh, so you still had everything in place?
I still had everything. I just changed the location. I'll admit that I've been pretty broke ever since, and then this summer, just a few weeks ago, a supporter decided to help me, and they obtained a building for me, and they got my possessions out of storage for me. They didn't give me any cash. I got a few donations from a couple other collectives as far as marijuana for the shelf to start with. But, you know, it gave me a start, you know. And I have people out there who support me, people out there who believe in my cause. This person, you know, he read about me. He didn't even know of me until, like, this summer. And, you know, he totally jumped on board this story and helped me out. And
has business been good?
Well, like I said, we just started over the last week or two as I've been putting it together. A lot of people have stopped by. I do believe the location I'm at, directly across the street from USC General Hospital, and there's a huge cancer treatment center there, and that's how I even spotted the building, because I was going there to get my own cancer treated. I see this empty building across the street. I got to talk to the owner, and like I said, I believe it's going to be a pretty good location. It's definitely a location that has a lot of traffic. There's going to be a lot of legitimate medical marijuana.
Are you in the grapevine? Is it hitting the buzz? You on Facebook? Everybody's kind of, the community's going, he's open, it's the weed man, it's over there, go, and the next time they need a supply, they'll come say, yo, what's up?
Well, I have a huge email list. I just blasted it out this weekend. You know, I had hundreds of people who went to my other collective, which was in Hollywood. I believe that I will get some of those who will come travel just to see me at least come one time.
Oh, man, if you ain't the neon flashing poster child for pissing the man off, okay? I mean, this is, you know, how do you think that the local law enforcement there, or look, I mean, do you get any kind of defense from the overreach of the federal government from local law enforcement, or are they just direct traffic? I mean, you know what?
No. In fact, the local government helps. You know, that's the funny part about it. Even though state law says that all this is legal, when the DEA comes, they commission the local police to help them as they
absolutely
enforce federal law.
Fusion Center kind of give them money, pay overtime. We need to requisition special deputized, get a shiny badge, sleeve stripe, de la, whatever, freaking mercenaries.
Yep.
You know, this whole thing is, you're really, and I hate to see you have to go through this. I'm really glad that you are, though, to emphasize what's happening. And this is, I'm really interested in what you think is going to be the after on this. Let's say you prevail in another hung jury. Are they able to try you again?
No. They're only allowed twice. If they attempt to try it a third time, a judge has to approve it. But I don't think so. Double jeopardy laws are going to intercede. I think this is it here. But I think what happens, what's going to happen here.
Hey, I thought a lot of things.
I think I'm going to win, though. I really do. I'm not even really worried or scared about it. I think I'm going to win. I'm definitely going to give Governor Christie a nice little public beating. I'm going to come back to California, really get into full swing again with my USC collective. And then I hope I don't have to battle Uncle Sam.
Well, tell me what's going on there in L.A. I mean, right in the middle of you opening this, we just had stories all last week, 80-something. I mean, they're full court press and put a woe to this, which is surprising to me, going into an election cycle. And Obama, you know, part of his election success was on the promise he was going to leave you guys alone. You know,
I'm real upset about that as far as Obama's public marijuana policy. Because I even made a commercial and a video for him 4 years ago. I did a video with Shepard Fairey and Will I Am
sucker
support. Yeah, and then I was one of the people raided by the DEA. I'm definitely upset about that. And last week I was actually going to open on last Wednesday, and they did those raids on Tuesday, so I kind of held off until this week. but they raided one location is only like a mile from where my location is at, and really what they did was they raided three places and they sent letters to 68 others.
Oh, it wasn't like there wasn't a message there. So what is
there's not enough DEA agents to close the 1,000 shops in Los Angeles.
Damn, they do or don't? Did you say they do?
They don't.
No, yeah,
they
of course.
They don't have enough shots. There was an article a few weeks ago about how the DEA was trying to deputize 1,200 state officials, state officers.
Of course they are, and they'll line up and say, "Please give me." You know, it's us versus them. Okay, now
I find it amazing that here in America, our federal government is disregarding the will of the people. I mean, we send hundreds of thousands of troops to Iraq and Afghanistan to support a democracy, right? Well, democracy has happened right here in California.
Yeah,
where,
no,
where
I.
People have said.
We're way past that, Edward. We're way past that. Come on, man. I mean, if you haven't figured that out yet, and a vast majority of Americans are from examples like you. Now, you're on the ballot this election cycle?
I'm on the ballot in New Jersey.
For what?
The legalized marijuana party.
For Congress.
I'm running for Congress in the 3rd District, and anyone can find me by going to njweedman.com. Almost everything I've talked about today is on my website.
NJ as in New Jersey. New Jersey. njweedman.com. Okay. So now, how's your race going? Are you getting attention for that?
I think I'm doing pretty good on Facebook. And I'm doing pretty good with the young people. I mean, I don't know what kind of impact I'm going to have. I know I'm going to get a few thousand votes. I don't expect to win. I'm not that high. But just the fact that once again, I've gotten it out in the public. Once again, I've brought jury nullification to the forefront. I'm happy.
Now, we appreciate you making the effort and putting yourself out in the line out there. You know, sometimes they just mess with the wrong guy. And you keep messing with the wrong guys, you know, all the people. Sooner or later, you find Neo. There's always the one. There's always that one guy that's like, he looks down the hallway, he puts his palm up to him, and he says, no. That's all it takes.
Yep.
You know, well, oh, Edward.
No compliance.
Thank
no compliance,
you.
No cooperation, and no conviction.
Thank you, Edward Fortune. We're going to go ahead and stay tuned on this. Hold on, I want to talk to you a second. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's Freedoms with an S, PhoenixEZine.com.
Studios of Freedoms Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. From me, Ernest Hancock. Hello. Okay, this is what we're doing. We're talking to Edward Fortune, New Jersey Weedman, njweedman.com. He's going back. He had a hung jury, 7 in favor of acquittal, 5, no, he's got to go to jail. He's drugs. So 7-5, and the prosecutor says, no, we're going to try again. And I go, well, they can just keep doing this. He goes, no, the judge, you know, you have to get permission to, you know, do him a third time. Well, I wonder if he'll give it. I mean, seriously, man, you know, how long does it take to learn this stuff? So I'm going, all right. So he went ahead right in the middle of them doing the raids on all these other clinics and so on. You know, they raid 3. They send letters to 80-something of them. He opens up right across from a cancer research place, you know, where he goes. He has bone cancer, and he's, you know, doing his whatever. So he's like, you know, there'd be a good place right there. He opens it up, gets support, and he's like, you know, making some money again. You know, it's all good. So, okay, so let's see where this goes. Well, what's going to happen? On the 10th of October, which is not too long from now, I think it's that next week, isn't it? Is that next week? Yeah. Yeah, so what is today's date? Yeah, we're October 1st. Wednesday. Okay, so Wednesday's the 10th and of next week, and they're doing jury selection. So we're going to go ahead and go through the trial, and I said, okay, so when's the jury get seated, when you start the trial and everything? He said, you know, in the following week, it'll probably go till Thursday the 18th. So Monday or Tuesday, Donna and Edward are working it out. It'd be the 15th or 16th. We're going to have him on. Now, we're going to put up all the live, you know, the YouTubes and the Ustreams and the Twitter and the Facebooks and all that. And, you know, he's going to be tweeting, you know, live from whatever, as much as he can have his, you know, Twitter phone with him. And, we're going to get live coverage of this entire process. And I'm really interested in this because, you know, the optimism, it's cool. You know, he's like, hey, man, you know, I'm using, you know, beating him up against the head. And they don't like the fact that I'm using Fija. Well, let me think. What's the word? Duh. You know, duh. In fact, the Fija argument is probably as scary to them as the people just, you know, voting for marijuana. They don't say, yeah, you know, go. Because they can just, you know, yeah, well, we're DEA and we come in and we're going to, you know, get over it. And I'm going, all right. Well, what happens when you do prosecute these guys and the juries just start saying not guilty all the time? They're just not guilty. Oh, by the way, not guilty. Yeah, blah, 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 not guilty. Well, here in Arizona, you know, he didn't know about it. Oh, go ahead and send him the story about Mark's case, 83-pound marijuana thing. Because just a few weeks ago, 6 weeks ago or so, Mark Victor, running for U.S. Senate now, he had a woman that had 83 pounds of marijuana in her van. Not guilty. Did you or did you not have in? You know, was there or was there not? Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't know it was there. Okay, not guilty. Yeah, I was a mule. I don't know. Just not guilty. It's getting to the point to where juries just need, you know, give me a little bit of an excuse, a reason, a cover to say not guilty. And as you learn about Fija, and you can just say not guilty because you just think the law sucks, not guilty. They do not want to, and who doesn't? I mean, who are these people that are in charge now wearing the black robes? You know, who are these people? Anti-American, you know, freaking collectivist, statist, we rule you people. And it's just becoming so obvious to so many. And as the dollar, it always comes down to economics. That's one thing I really liked in one of the last debates. It's the last or the second to last presidential debate where Dr. Paul, you know, kind of resigned, you know, and said, look, you know, it was unique that he had this to say. He goes, look, you know, I've tried the moral argument. I've tried the constitutional argument. But I'm going to win this economic argument. You know, blah, 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 blah. When the dollar goes, you know, ooh, what that old man said. You know, and he knows this. I know it. A lot of you know it. It's, you know, but what pleasure do you get? Ha, 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 ha. We were right. The dollar went and everybody's in poverty. Yay. So what we're hoping to accomplish and advocate for is an after. But there is no after until we get the monkey off our back that we have to have permission or absolution or sanction from the government. That which is not mandatory is forbidden. You know, this mentality is just, that's what's killing us. So I'm going, all right, so I like Edwards, you know, in his bio and stuff. We didn't get a lot of this. We got to talk about what I wanted to talk about. But, you know, he was in here, one of his big things is that he's proudly, you know, I transport, you know, gazillions of pounds of marijuana. He proudly admits he was a marijuana smuggler, driving hundreds of pounds of cannabis from Arizona border towns to East Coast cities such as Cleveland, Ohio, Philadelphia, New York City, and Camden, New Jersey. His Mexican-Cuban suppliers in Arizona were the first to dub him the New Jersey Weed Man because while other drugs were available for transport, he only wanted to transport cannabis. Because he had bone cancer. He was benefiting from it. He needed it. And he knew other people did too. And he's like, yeah, and I'm Rastafarian, and everybody can just bite it. Okay? I was in, you know, the Army. I was in the Marines. I was in the National Guard. You know, here's a guy who was in the National Guard, gets out, goes in the Marines. Has an asthma attack. They kick him out. He wants to get back in so bad he couldn't get back in. He changed his name so that he could get in to the Army. Now, of course, now you probably couldn't do that with, you know, DNA sampling or whatever. But so this is, you know, he just wanted to be left alone kind of guy. You know, he has a health problem. He sees marijuana as the cure. Steve Cubby, man, that's been big advocate for marijuana. He's the one who got it on the ballot in California. You know, big LP guy running for and doing. I don't want to die. I smoke marijuana. And he does, too, a lot. I mean, big, giant gar joints. You know, these big cigars, man. I mean, I'm like, seriously? All right. You know, and he can get up and give a speech. You can tell when he does it, though. He gets all Chinese-eyed and everything. But I'm going, okay. So we're going to go ahead and follow this through. We're in a different time. You can start to see why I keep... We just wait for him to die off. This generation is just suppressing this mentality, this collective we rule you kind of stuff. It just fades away. As we have, like in our first hour, young man Gabriel Mueller, that's an economics teacher. He gets his law degree, doesn't go to the bar, and he goes, nah, I don't care. Got my law degree, got my master's in, you know, my Ph. Juris, whatever the heck, you know, and he's going, nah, I'm good. Oh, I want to teach economics. I know Austrian economics. I want to do that. Okay, what do you got to do? You want to take a test? Okay, I take a test. I pass the test. Give me some of them young minds. 10th grade, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old, saying, hello, let me tell you about Austrian economics. Then, oh man, the bottom be a coming. Here we go. So I'm going to do precious metals and start writing and doing them. I'm like, yeah, get your butt on, man. Let's do it. Oh, is he submitting articles or anything this month, magazine, Gabriel? You know, tell him he's not writing something. He's got stuff to write and he didn't do it. Better send him an email. Say, hey, yo, what's up? So go ahead and do that. We'll get him on because he's going to come on in a couple of weeks, and we'll, you know, spend some time talking about that. You know, the end is nigh because I just want to survive it, you know, and keep. I tell you what, my main goal is. It's not just surviving. Okay, you know, I'm feeling pretty as long as my family's taken care of. We raised our children to be good parents, so we can get good grandkids and all that kind of stuff. We're really enjoying it. The thing is, though, is that, you know, your goal is more than just keep breathing in and out as long as you can and longer than the other guys. Your goal should also be to maintain your humanity. You know, it does you no good, you know, to survive a battle and live with regret, crushing, debilitating regret for the rest of your life. You know, that's what makes heroes. It's not that they, rent out and expect they were going to take the machine gun nest and not get hurt. It's that they knew they couldn't live with themselves if they didn't.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
This is, a lot of what we try to accomplish here is just inspiration of, other people. If not doing it yourself, certainly support those that are, hipping you. Be free in, your name. Look, man, all of us in the freedom community would prefer this, but not that. And you're going, yeah, what he said, and then what do? I don't know, do something. Send them, an ounce of silver, carry a sign, go out and corner something. That's one thing that reminds me of Jean Manwether. She is, we call her the sine wave girl, man. I mean, she was a hippie from, back when, and her husband are just now, he just retired from the airport. He was a jet engine mechanic, and he just retired this last year. So they've been busy. He goes, I go, what have you been doing? He goes, reloading. So I'm like, all right, cool. So what happens is she could not go anywhere. Say we're going to, okay, we're leaving this rally, or we're going to this, we'll do that. We'll meet you at the, the Denny's, the Burger King, whatever, on some corner, and we're all, and while she'd get there first, or she was early, while she was waiting, she could not make use of the time to go stand on the corner and hold the sign. Everybody knew where to turn because there was Jean, okay? Everywhere, all the time, across the country, her and Donna, her and Renee, her and her friend, her by herself, whatever. She was out, I'd be the sign-holding individual. I'm not really sure why, other than it just, makes her feel better. She wants to be productive. She wants to multitask. But it's a big impact it's had. I've heard many times that people had, I saw this sign they kind of do and direct in the .com org, wherever it was. I went and I came and hung out because I saw the sign. So everything helps. It's just how much. Everything works. Every activism. We did this. I remember when I was in a restaurant when, let's see, I went to Arizona State University, I think it was 81. Now, I graduated in 79, I worked for a year, I saved my money, I went, I joined a fraternity, because, it was, the biggest reason why is because it was cheaper. You get your entertainment, you get your housing, everything, you want me, I was a high school athlete, okay, sign me up. And then I'm like, a little too collective, authoritarian kind of plebe thing, it didn't rub off well. But, during that time, I'm like, just wanting to, get the most I can out of my experience and so on. I go help a friend move to New York. She got a job with Eastern Airlines, and her boyfriend were good friends of mine, and I helped them move and kind of all this and so on, get there. And now I got to, what I'm going to do for the rest of the semester, that spring semester. So I came back, in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, in Tennessee, to check on my sister. She had just gotten married, had a baby, and I kind of worked. So they had some financial problems. So I hung out there, got a job as an assistant manager at the Domino's. This is when Domino's Pizza was first starting to go. And it was, man, I mean, they're doing like 130 pizzas an hour. I mean, it was, you know, when it was payday at the military base, they'd be ordering pizza. So I became, you know, manager, travel around states, opening restaurants. So that's where I got my restaurant industry understanding of. And the one thing that, you know, I got out of that, you know, aside from the business and all that kind of stuff, is a lot of marketing stuff. I mean, they were, you know, you need to market. You know, this is how you do ads. This is how you do pay stuff. Back in the days, we actually had cut and paste from a ad book that you did and printed and out and actually, you know, did it. So then that helped me with being able to do publication of newspapers that went on, you know, the electronic version of the PageMaker, doing, you know, our newspapers, became Freeman's Phoenix. I mean, it's all a line, you know, of going from there to here. And my experiences, just life experiences with all this, has brought me to the position and the place to where I am now. And everything that I've done, it was all, you know, doing the business part of it and starting to see what kind of permits and permissions and everything you needed then to now. And then you start to see the transition of the culture and how it is that they started to permeate. It's not just a local town thing or a county thing or a state thing. It's a federal thing. And you get that with the medical marijuana links into the clinics and so on. It was an evolution of a culture that I sat there and watched happen at the fastest time that it made the transition in my lifetime. I mean, I could see, I'm sure it started earlier on, you know, Lincoln and, you know, and then the Federal Reserve and them doing, taking over the money and all that. This was just a natural result of this mentality, and it is the change in that perspective that is what's going to change everything. So as I went through this, you know, progression, you know, of, you know, my life and, you know, whatever, there was always a splinter in my mind that, you know, what was and was not acceptable. You know, what was and wasn't the proper roll up. What was and was not. And finally, it was 88, I remember, 88, 89, around in there, that I go, okay. So there's this deal they say I'm part of. You know, I got a gun to my forehead saying I shall comply with, you know, whatever agreement that they got, this contract that I never signed. So I'll go ahead and read the contract. And I go, yeah, I can see a lot of loopholes in here. They can do whatever the heck they want. But, you know, this Declaration of Independence is pretty clear. The Constitution kind of gave a lot of power, but they restricted a lot of this Bill of Rights thing. I could see kind of the mentality of what was going on. And I go, and it brings me to this point that I wanted to make today. I'm glad I thought of it. Original discovery, okay? This concept of original discovery. Let me write this down so I don't forget. Original discovery. All right, let me tell you what I mean by that. How much time I got in this segment? All right. When I started to see that there was a problem, and I wanted to research, and so I go to the library, and I had to do, when I filed the lawsuits and all the election law, I could see where that, you know, all that was going and so on. What happened was, I'm going, man, there's, you know, something, I can't be the only one that saw this. You start reading Thomas Jefferson and boom, John Locke, you know, Sam Adams, you know, Hancock, you go, boom, okay. Yeah, they definitely saw that this was where it was going. Thomas Paine, you know, Patrick Henry, they're going, you give central authority some power, man, it'll just never stop. You know, the goal is not to, like, you know, try and have a good central power, it's to not have a central power. So the Constitution came out, and they argued against it, and, you know, it stopped. I stopped right there. Didn't want to read anymore. I mean, literally, it was just a couple of days of kind of skimming through, kind of go, whoa. I just give these books back. I don't want to do that. And this was the reason. I understood how powerful these thoughts were, and it was going to make a leap. It was going to jump over the actual personal experiences of living that had already, by that time, had already got a good dose of business and philosophy and so on in the real world, okay? I had already started to know that there was a splinter in my mind. There was something wrong. We were being manipulated. You're flipping through the channels, the same five stories for 250 million people at the time in the same order on the networks. I'm like, man, there is something wrong. What I did is I go, if I go ahead and start to read all these guys that are making great arguments, then their ideas become my ideas, and I missed the benefit of original discovery. I understood that then. No, I want to go through this and learn it and feel it and embrace it and come to the conclusion on my own. And I did. And that applies to this month's edition of the E-Zine. And I'll make the transition when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Rich now voices can't be heard. Just want to scream louder and louder and louder. What the hell are we fighting for?
Yeah! What are we fighting for? Understanding is one of the best things. You know, this is what's going on. Okay. We have this month's e-zine is coming up, and it's really, you know, from the Garage Workbench. Okay. And the purpose of government to defend the rights of the individual to, you know, their life, their liberty, their pursuit of happiness, you know, to keep what they, you know, their life and liberty produce, your property. I mean, why would you have a government? You know, to not do that. Ooh, yay! I vote for that one. You know, so I'm just, you know, it's pretty simple to understand. And in my learning, it had to be organic with me. It had to be truth. It had to be deep. It had to be a foundation that I could build on to come to the progression of something. Now, you can't base any kind of enlightenment on something that you know to be babbly, gobbly, googly BS anyway. You know, it's just the way I am, and I know that's how a lot of the young people are. But sometimes, you know, you'll have where the government and whatever institution, you know, be in there, you know, the educational institution, religious institution, government institution, whatever institution, they're going to come in and they're going to say, you know what, we base this entire, everything that we do on this. I don't know, what is it? America. Right or wrong America. Flag America. You know, go whip ass America. You know, whatever it is, and then all is justified because of that, because America. Then you're going, right. You know, there has to be something more foundational, certainly with, you know, young people that are starting to come to the realization that, you know, they're being BS'd. So I'm going, okay. What's my foundation? I'm starting scratch. And I didn't want to be influenced by other people's ideas. I just knew better. I'm just like, because, you know, you read, you know, Paine and Henry and Jefferson and so on. You can go, whoa, man, what they said. And all of a sudden, you might as well just be a clone. And then you take on a lot of the stuff. Some they weren't perfect. So I'm just like, look, I'm doing original discovery here. I'm just, you know, give me the truth. And the Declaration of Independence, like, woo, what he said had a big impact on me. That's why this show, declare your independence, okay? Plus, it gives me an excuse to write my name really big. So then I'm going, okay. So as I go through the process of understanding, you know, then it becomes more in later years, you know, it becomes, you know, in the late 90s, mid 90s, you know, after about 5 or 6 years of this, you start opening yourself to more writings, you read a little bit more stuff, you start saying, you know, then you keep hearing, you know, how you're like Rothbard a lot and that and everything. So you start checking that guy. Okay. Yeah, I can see, you know, any other comparisons or whatever. So I'm going, okay. It was this no compromise mentality towards a prime, you know, understanding of something. You know, I'm a leave me alone-ist. There are those that just want to be left alone, those that just won't leave me alone. You know, it's good to see Chris Duane really embracing that concept. And whether, you know, if he ripped me off, you know, that'd be cool, you know, but it probably just an original thought. And, you know, just like minds think alike. You know, you start getting along this idea, you start advocating, you know, that's really no more complicated than that. So I'm like, cool. This is really starting to take hold in our culture. Then what? I don't know. But that's one thing I asked Gabriel to write about. Is he going to do it? Cool. So Gabriel, I called, you know, being an economic teacher and a trained, got his judicial, I can be a lawyer thing. And but he didn't do his bar because, But he could, I guess, if he wanted to. So Gabriel, I wanted him to go ahead and participate in this e-zine from that perspective. The purpose of government was to allow for the flourishing of new and original discovery and the application of technology and just interest and curiosity. The one thing that Eisenhower warned about, he said, look, what is going to replace is replacing individual intellectual curiosity in the garage and with a blackboard is a government grant. They're taking all of the bright people and putting them in the service of the machine, thinking that that is an ultimate goal. It's the ultimate compliment. Of course, that's, you know, being, you know, a top cog in the machine and getting your $100,000 a year and being able to drive a nice car and white picket fence and you know, a wife and this and that and everything. That's the future and freedom. And then they snatch everything away because their mentality has destroyed the economy and the dollar and everything else that all this was built on. You go, whoa, what's up? Something happened. And this happened to a lot of people. So I'm going, okay. You know, we heard from Carla Garrick, Free State Project. She's an attorney, smart, you know, young individual, got, you know, big brain box, comes from South Africa. They definitely want her and her husband to come to America because she's smart. Oh, yeah, you approved, okay? She goes to work as an attorney in Silicon Valley, and then all of a sudden the dot-com thing, everybody went, whoa, 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 I got to do some checking. What the hell? I'm a free stater now. You know, this realization of the next generation's coming up, and even my generation, we saw it happening. So who is, you know, and I'm 50, so who is it we're against? We're against the people that are retired and older, and they are funding or supporting people my age and younger to help perpetuate what they're doing, and even they know it's BS. A lot of their peers like me, nah, this isn't, you know, it didn't work, and we're certainly, so who's, what's the battle over? Is the young minds, the next generation coming up. And they got nothing. You know, the other guys, I mean, the bad guys, they got nothing. What do they got? What's their example? Oh, we should be in charge and keep doing what we're doing because we've created this great, wonderful what? Nothing. Nothing. So you go, okay. So original discovery. My point is, in this edition of the magazine, and we're spending a lot of time on the cover and so on, and I'll be giving a presentation at Libertopia on it. And my whole concept is this. It is individuals. It is the Teslas, the Edisons, the Einsteins that greatly advance humanity. Archimedes, Da Vinci. I mean, it's just every now and then you get, you know, ooh, and if you don't have a fertile culture to support that, all of a sudden you got a Roman soldier coming in, putting a sword through Archimedes, and how diminished is humanity? How much of a step back is that? You have the church, you know, excommunicating and even, you know, whatever they do, you know, the Inquisition on people that would go, well, you know, I think the earth goes around the sun. Heresy! Boom! You know, so I can see if you have a freedom-oriented supporting culture, Lord forbid government, that was there to prevent the force of others, to just leave us alone inside this country's borders to innovate, to have original discovery, to get all of the chemicals and glassware and goodies and electrical and device and kind of, and play with on our workbench, to have original discovery, to learn how, you know, you look at your smartphone, you have no freaking clue how that thing works. Do you even know what a transistor is? What's a, you know, we went from, you know, vacuum tube to transistor. Yay. Made it smaller. Yeah, I know that. Transistor radio, oh, it's really a lot smaller. I can take it and put a 9-volt battery in and go to the beach when in the 60s. Ain't that cool? Why? I have no idea. Why does this compound work on this? Why is that? In biology. Why is marijuana such a good drug or treatment for a lot of things? Why? I don't know. You know, how does biology work on, you know, a lot of things? What kind of pharmaceuticals and medicines, you know, what harm do they do me? Why? It is amazing to me. They have marijuana sitting over here, and at night we're watching television, and I can't, it's like they got my mind. They keep, you know, distracting me from even doing this one thing I wanted to make a note of this, Donna, please, so that I remember to do this. All of the, a list of warnings of everything, because some of these warnings are amazing. You know, we'll go ahead and go online, get all the commercials, and, you know, could cause this, a rash of that, you know, death on this, you know, having, you know, kind of, you know, your teeth fall out and all that kind of stuff, but it clears up your skin. But you get, you know, 4-hour erections. Or, you know, you can, you know, it diminishes your freckles, you know, and it, you know, whatever, it gives you death, dying, damnation on everything else in your body, but it gives you this one, but you're not allowed to get, you know, fill in the blank. You know, this is, I can see it's a culture thing. It's a mindset. And people don't emphasize it. They're like, no, you got to be behind the lever of power. You get your turn at the wheel of the Titanic. And if you didn't get your turn, you're a failure. I'm going, yeah, well, you guys are worrying about that. You just keep going on. You go ahead. You go ahead. You go ahead. And what am I going to do? Everything I can to inspire Generation Next and just figure it out on their own.
Liberty Coin simplifies the process of buying coins and precious metals. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery. Just great prices. In fact, some of the best prices in the nation. And they've become one of the largest gold sellers in the Southwest. I trust Liberty. Visit their Scottsdale store or call 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052.
Liberty.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Sometimes I grow so tired.
Sing my song. Hello. You know, the original discovery, this is what I'm advocating. This is what I can see that they're doing. They don't want you to understand and fully grasp and know some of the fundamental base things that all of a sudden you build on that and on that and on that, and all of a sudden you got independence from the grid and the man and whatever in hell, no. That's what they, them, those are afraid of, is that they, them, those don't matter. You know, we will not be ignored. Well, you want an example? California marijuana clinics. You know what happens? The state goes, nah, we don't care about you. We're going to do it anyway. We will not be ignored. And then they come in and they take and do and whatever. You got local law enforcement there defending against the federal government, infringing on the will of the people as expressed at their election and the sovereignty of the state, yada, yada, yada. Hell no. So, you know, what good are they? What good is this democracy thing? What good is it? What was the whole point? Hell, even Jefferson was saying, hey, man, when the man gets to decide what you get to use as medicine for your body and the foods and this, that, you know, that next, done, time to alter or abolish. I mean, he was very clear about this. All right. So I didn't want to do all this reading and everything early on. I go, no, I want to, I have one focus. I go, how is it that they are able, while they're screaming for us to export and provide for our trade deficit reduction here in the United States, my father manufactured stuff, long story. But the point was, as I'm going, they're lying. What they're saying out of one side of their mouth, they're doing everything they can to prevent on the other side. And it's just suppressing. Why? To the advantage of whom? I didn't understand. This Saturday, I started getting sick. I was thinking, I think it was like Friday or something. And it was one of those, here we go. You know, I got, bad allergies that time of year, something, chemtrails, whatever. I don't know. So I'm sitting there, I'm not feeling well. So Saturday, it got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm going to get really sick. And this happened about a year and a half ago when we first moved here. All of the, things that I usually do to keep me from getting sick, we had stored away. I said, I'll just muscle through it, man. I got really bad sick. Now, if you go back a year and a half ago, I had to wear sunglasses. My eyes were so red. In fact, I mean, it was like, man, I was Resident Evil, and I'm just going, wow. And I had to sleep all day. And I had an afternoon show, and it was all I could do to get up and do a few hours. And after, I think I had 2 hours then, and I'm just going, I can make it, And so what I did this weekend is what I always do. I don't know if this is, I should do this with your brand or something. It's ascorbic acid. It's like pure vitamin C, de la, whatever. I get this, and I've just been down in these. I usually get liquid C, and I'll just, chug a 16-ounce bottle over a day. I mean, it's like gasoline for white blood cells or something. And that, when I first started doing that, I had a big thing. Then zinc. When you start first getting sick, what it is, I'm like, how does this work? What is so great about zinc? What zinc does is it's kind of like silver. You take the silver and it has an antibiotic. It's the same thing. It's a metal that has, properties. That's why they do the Zicam as zinc. They put it up your nose or whatever. It's like a physical barrier to a lot of microbes and so on. And it kind of stops them coming in, the growth of wherever they were, and then let your immune system with the vitamin C kind of beat up what already got in your system. So that's how I understand it. So the zinc thing, I added that. Man, that really cut things down a lot. So I'm going, all right. And then the other thing was vitamin D. That's why when, you know, people start getting sick and the when it starts getting cooler, a lot of it is because you're not out in the sun getting the vitamin D. It has a lot to do with your immune system. So I'm going, you know, I don't get all anal about having this stuff, you know, all the time as a regimen, putting in whatever, because I do the juicing. But I start feeling it coming on. I hit the bed, do all this. What kind of movies I want to watch? And Saturday, I probably slept all day. I did, you know, and by Sunday, I'm going, I had enough energy, you know, and hopefully I didn't think I was contagious. Donna went over to watch the grandkids so our my son and daughter-in-law could go out in movies or whatever. And they go, oh, Papa, come over and play with us. So I did, you know, I ran over there and did the Play-Doh thing. So I went, I had enough energy to go over and play with them a little bit and so on. Yeah, Grandpa, doesn't feel good. I'm going to go back, lay down, boom, done. Sunday, I get up, I'm cured. One day. And these minimum would drag out 3 days, even more than a week. I'm cured one day. And I'm telling you, every time I don't do this regimen, I get sick. I can beat this thing back in a day if I can get rest. I get, you know, a bunch of vitamin C, some zinc, a little vitamin D I add to this thing, and I have colloidal silver. I forgot to grab that jar. And the stuff that we made ourselves with their colloidal silver making thing that Drew and Nick did, you know, at Porkfest last year, they were like, you know, let me show you how you do this. So I'm going, all right, so I get the colloidal silver, and you gargle with it every now and then. What you're doing with that is you're stopping the infection at this end as it's going in, and then letting your body with some of the other goodies, you know, kind of get taken care of. At least that's my argument. And the point is after you get to be 50-something and you got over a decade of doing this and it working, and then the one time you didn't do it because you had your stuff packed and you got, like, deathly ill and people that helped us move knew I didn't have to move anything because I was dead. Get the mattress in here, laid on the floor so I can lay down for a couple days. I mean, it was, I was in bad way. And the thing was, is that I'm going, this is from what? Original discovery and the freedom to do this. What do they want to eliminate? Your ability to do this. Why? Because it benefits us, pharmaceutical, de la, they, them, those, whatever the hell. And you have in Europe, they already have, it supplements our freaking prescription. And they want to do that with vitamin Bs now, B6 or something. Why? Because they can. At what point? You guys, no, you can't. Oh, yeah, we can. We just passed a law and got this law enforcement guy, and you can't buy it and can't get it. So in the original discovery, all the inventions and everything, what am I finding out? I got to get all this glassware and play, you know, mad scientist and everything in my lab over here to be able to convert nickel down into some different compounds of nickel oxide, nickel dioxide, nickel this, nickel that. I need some cobalt, you know, blah, blah, blah for the catalyst for being able to make my nanotube kind of thing because you're not allowed to get it. It's nickel! Seriously? So even finding the nickel bullion is becoming a pain in the butt. The little bit that I got, you know, I'm paying exorbitant amounts for. I get, you know, and you know, pure nickel bars on eBay. I couldn't find anywhere else. No precious metals have it. No other place. I got to go today, tomorrow, go to Papago Plating, which is a place here that does a lot of nickel plating, you know, chromine and that kind of stuff here. I go, where in the heck are you getting your nickel? What do I got to do? How do I order? What do I got? Who I got to what? Well, what do they say? Can't deliver it to residential. You go in industrial, we got to have a manufacturer's license. What do I want? I don't have a manufacturer's license. We got business, yeah. They don't have licenses for publishing yet, for talk shows yet, for free speech yet. So what happens? Second Amendment guys are going, oh, yeah, you know, you got a permit for a gun? Well, fine, you need a permit for a First Amendment. They go, that's a good idea. We should think about that. You think I'm kidding? They'll say, oh, we need irresponsible speech. We got to have, you know what the you know cure for irresponsible speech is? More speech. And that's a Jefferson thing, too. So I'm just going, I can see where this is. I see. This is the one thing that I have a lot of confidence in, is my ability to see trends into the future. Now you go, you got Gerald Celente doing that trends research this and doing numbers and kind of, you know, whatever. And to me, it's a crystal freaking clear ball for me. I've always been able to. This is the one. If I had one trait that I had that I thought that was, you know, I thought everybody would see it. It's only in the last few years I'm going, wow, there's not a lot of people see this. Connect the dots. You know, we can look at our second hour guest. We had Edward NJ Weedman for New Jersey Weedman Fortune. Now, it's njweedman.com. And you go find in this case he's working. And, you know, for him, he's going, Well, I don't know. They blindsided me. I never would have thought that a prosecutor in New Jersey would get the DEA to raid, you know, my medical clinic that I had in California that was funding me going and beating them over the head in New Jersey about the elimination of marijuana laws and the jury laws and the jury saying not guilty and mine kind of, you know, and hung and doing what. It never occurred to me that I'm going, God, man, where was the block? You know what? Of course they'll do that. I put myself in a position. That's why I'm so open about what I'm doing, because what do I got to get? I got to get distilling and glassware and all kinds of scientists bubbling, Bunsen burner and doing dissolving stuff and everything. Meth lab. Oh, got to go get them because, that look like it. No. I'm doing this experimenting on making Nikolai and bad kind of, you know, whatever. Oh, you're getting a tour. Oh, you're cooking up a blah, 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 blah. If I'm not open about this and everybody knows what I'm doing, they'll say whatever they want to of what I'm doing. And the suppression of being able to get the very small, itty-bitty, simple stuff to do it. I'm having to get chemicals from freaking the pool place and Home Depot and Drainer this and Ace Hardware and everything and make it myself so I can do the simplest stuff. Are you freaking kidding me? This is my point. They are shutting us down because it benefits them. They do not want us to have original discovery and learn how the freaking cell phone works. And I don't mean which button to push. I mean the fundamental base understanding